Hi there.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh my
We did
God.
that, girl. We did that.
We're gonna
I mean,
prove
I don't
James
know what I
wrong.
did, but we did that.
It's incredible. Turning it on and turning it off again is truly
It
the
is.
best way.
This is a scientific method, just
One go.
in one
So,
go.
how's your day been?
I did nothing today, so that was great. I had a stomach ache all day, so I just kind of like stayed home and nurtured it a little bit. One of my favorite things to do whenever I have a stomach ache is try to consume ginger in some way. So they had those little ginger candies at
Oh,
Publix.
I love those.
Yeah, those are great. Whenever I have a stomach ache, I eat those, or I drink some ginger ale. But like pro tip, ginger is really good for stomach aches and nausea, so definitely consume it whenever you have one, and it helped a
That
lot.
I heard that lemon is also really great for nausea. Like, if you're feeling kind of squeamish, if you smell lemon, it helps. It also
Oh.
gets rid of the smell of fish and dead people. I found that out, interestingly, in
Oh.
reading like this book about this scientist lady who like cuts up cadavers and she always goes home and smells like dead people. And she's like, this is not attractive at all. I'm never gonna get laid this way. So she was like doing research on how to get rid of the smell of the cadaver
Oh my
she works
God.
on. And she
I
was
know.
like, lemon.
That would make so much sense because lemon, like we all cleaning supplies smell like lemon. And if you want to mask your house in some kind of scent that makes it sound make it makes it smell like you cleaned your house, it's always lemon. Like you just like
It's
boil some
true.
lemons or something and just trick people into thinking you're clean. But I didn't know it was also like an anti-nausea thing too. That's really cool.
Yeah. You know what's something that I found out recently?
What?
If you cook something really nasty smelling, if you put like a pot of water and boil it and add a cup of fabric softener and boil that away for like a little while, your whole house will smell like a laundromat.
Oh, I feel like that's not safe for some reason. I don't know why. I feel like maybe
I
that's
tried it and nothing went on fire. Maybe like you have to keep it at a low
yeah,
simmer,
probably.
but I'll Google it. I'll see if it's potential fire hazard.
Because I don't know, like my understanding of how fire hazards work is very limited. So if it sounds like it could potentially be some like chemical, like what's the word? So like it's a, if it's a chemical hazard or something like that. But then again, like water, it's water, so it shouldn't be. So, but that's interesting though. Like I've never heard of that.
So far, Google doesn't say that it has caused any accidents. I'm sure it can cause a fire if you like look away and it overboils, but like I was looking at the pot the whole
Right.
time. I
Yeah,
was
you
like,
don't.
I'm watching
And
you.
there's like soap suds. Like, was the water like sudsy? Like, what was that like? It just smelled like a laundromat.
It was just like murky blue. Like, actually, it was kind of chunky and gross
Oh
looking when you first pour it in. And so I got like a whisk and like whisked the solution.
that's so interesting though. I've only heard of like boiling cinnamon or apples and like lemons and stuff like that to like make your house smell really nice. I've never done it before because I live in a pretty shitty apartment, so I never feel the need to do that. So, but like once I have like, my big suburban,
Millennial
yeah, my
dream.
big millennial dream home with granite countertops, there's always gonna be some
Nice.
cinnamon in the pot boiling.
Oh, your house is going to smell like Christmas all
Oh
the
yeah,
time.
there's gonna be a Christmas tree up all the time. I'm gonna have like
Is it going to be like a real one, or is it going to be like one of those synthetic ones?
When I was growing up, we never had real trees. I don't know why. We just always just reused the same tree, probably because it was a lot cheaper. So I've never like smelled a real Christmas tree before, I don't think, because my parents have always used the fake
No.
ones. So I like
That's so weird. Like, I've never celebrated Christmas because, I'm Muslim and
Right.
everything, but I have like distinct childhood memories of smelling Christmas trees because my dad was a waiter at hotels. So we'd
Oh.
always go to these fancy hotels and they'd always have a giant Christmas tree. And I remember that smell. It's like grassy, piney,
Yeah,
sort of. It smells really
it
nice.
is. I have only ever smelled it in candles. I had a friend who actually gave me a candle that was like an evergreen candle, and I smell it at work all the time. Like if I'm stressed, I just whip it out and I just sniff it. And it smells really good.
So we've got Christmas tree, lemons, ginger, fabric softener, all the things to smell.
All the things to smell. Honestly, like if you put me in a candle shop, I would just like forever. Like if you put me in front of crack, I don't know what I would do. I'd probably, go crazy. Like anything up to my nose, it's like putting stuff in my mouth.
This
I'll
is
just do it impulsively.
suddenly become an aromatherapy podcast. Don't know how we got here.
Yeah. I don't like the smell that everyone loves that I'm not crazy about is lavender.
Really? Like
I'm not
straight out of it or like after?
like after like I have a lavender spray and I use it, but I'm not crazy about it. I just smell it and I'm like, okay, it smells like it smells nice, but why is it everywhere?
I don't like it, like when you just spray it or you smell it out of like one of those essential oil things. I think it smells like shit.
Yeah.
But afterwards, like when it dies down, I think it smells kind of nice, like a little vanilla florally. But I know what you're talking about. It can be pretty overpowering.
Yeah, and people will say that it's like a distressing aroma too. I know that like when people do like the essential oil things, they'll add like lavender to like distress, and like you put like lavender on your pillows, it just stresses you. I don't know how true that is because I've never like noticed a significant difference,
I
but I have heard
have,
that.
yeah, I heard of that, and I'm like one of those who is an insomniac. I just can't sleep. I've tried like medication and stuff like that. So I was like, you know what? I'll try all the holistic approaches, lavender oil, completely cool my room, whatever. And I spray this little bottle of the fabric softener solution thing of lavender that I have, and out of the bottle, I notice it smells like garbage. I just hate the smell. But I've grown used to it and it's kind of has a calming effect because like there's a routine in place. But I
Maybe
feel like you
that's.
can do that with a lot of other scents.
Yeah,
Maybe they're like too arousing, the other scents.
that's true. I've also heard that lavender is also an arousing scent. I have actually, I don't know where I read this. I don't want to say it was Cosmopolitan, but I've read somewhere that like for men, the scents that arouse them the most are actually lavender. And I think pumpkin, like not like a cinnamony pumpkin scent, but like some kind of like just regular pumpkin.
Like a vegetable-y pumpkin.
That's what I interpreted it as. I don't, maybe that wasn't the vegetable that I was thinking of, but it was, I know that lavender was one of them, but there was another one and I assume that it was pumpkin.
Have you ever smelled a raw pumpkin?
Yeah, and it's not something that you would be aroused by.
It's not pleasant at
Yeah,
all.
because like isn't like a pumpkin-y scent instead just it's like cinnamon but with a little bit something.
Yeah,
It's
PSL scents are just like whatever spices you use
yeah, cinnamon,
inside a
nutmeg.
pumpkin, spiced
Yeah,
inside a
so I don't
pumpkin
know.
pie.
Yeah, so I don't know why I'm thinking it was a pumpkin scent. I feel like it was something else besides lavender. It wasn't vanilla. because I know that it's whatever it was. I took it to heart and I sprayed myself with it because
did it work as an aphrodisiac?
No, never. Because I would be married by now. It's really, I'm losing it. I don't know which one.
Nutmeg.
It might have been nutmeg, honestly. It was a scent that you wouldn't think, but the science behind it, like whatever I read it from, was probably like not accurate whatsoever and was probably like fake science. Like, I don't know what guys like to smell.
You know what's like a scent that everyone likes that's just really weird? Ambergris. What? Or ambergris. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's whale vomit that's been like fermented and it like ends up on the shores of beaches and is worth like millions of dollars. It smells so good. And I'm like insane for saying it, but I got a sample of perfume that uses the same chemical. Obviously it's synthetic, but it's such a clean smell. You're like, how did whale vomit get to be so fresh and like oceanic? I mean, I guess because it's like in the water and everything, but it smells so nice.
That is so interesting. Like, what would, like, if it was whale vomit, that's their bile, and so maybe like the water just makes it less like pungent.
Maybe because bile is a detergent. So,
oh, that is so interesting. I've actually never heard of that before.
That's like, so background for everyone else who's listening in, I'm studying for my medical entrance exams, so I'm on full nerd mode right now. I'll just be annoying that way.
How long have you been studying for?
Officially maybe 3 months. I've taken it before, so I have studied before. Now it's just like studying the stuff that I missed last time that I clearly like screwed up on massively. I just hate general chemistry. It's not something I ever want to learn how to work with, but well, here we are.
Yeah, I got a C in high school chemistry and I never touched it again. So that's my knowledge of chemistry.
I can feel
you
that.
Know a lot more than me.
No, I got a C in high school chemistry too. So that's relatable.
I had, was it like AP chemistry or was it like just regular or honors chemistry?
I think I took IB chemistry. Oh, I felt like such an idiot.
That was a completely different thing because I took like regular chemistry and I failed it. And this was like at a high school where there were like 1,300 people and they were all rednecks. So you can imagine the intensity of that curriculum. And I still like got a C in it.
I'm sure it's like harder when like your teacher has favorites.
That is true.
Yeah.
She was very chatty. Yeah, she definitely had favorites.
Yeah, because we had like 735 graduating kids in our year. And out of that, that's just the graduating. I think there was like a couple thousand in total. And our program was like 80 kids. And then only like 60 actually end up getting the certificate. So I never really saw the other 700 kids. I just like heard about them, or like they used to bully us while we walked through the corridors because they were like, oh, the nerds are going by.
So like 700 in your graduating class.
Yeah. And what was insane is that our graduating ceremony was at the Amway Arena. And at the end of it, I think it's only my school, we have fireworks that go off inside the arena. That has to be a fire hazard.
That, yeah, that would blow the arena up. But like, I just can't imagine 700 people in your graduating class. Mine was about 200, if not less, knowing that people dropped out all the time. 700, it's like, so like, you probably didn't know a lot of people. You were in IB, so I can imagine you guys had that like group that you guys knew. But
Oh, yeah. You knew every single student who was in your graduating class because you took classes with them all 4 years. And the
right.
teachers you got to know really well because some of them would be your teacher for like 3 or 4 years the whole way through.
Right.
But yeah, you really didn't get a chance to know other people outside of the program unless you did like extracurriculars.
Right. And you guys were IB, so you probably didn't have time for that.
No, we went my in my free time, what did I do? I slept a lot, and we used to do like a lot of stupid things. My friends did a lot of b-boying and like break dancing, which sounds like something I would not be involved with, but I just used to watch them break dance a lot and like be their groupies because they were all most of my friends were guys. I was like a total tomboy growing up, and like I remember. You know in those 90s movies when the girl like gets a makeover and everything?
Yeah.
That was me. That was literally my prom. I wore like makeup for the first time, contacts and stuff. And when I came
Oh.
out, my friends were like, "Oh my God, you're a girl." And I was like, "Yeah, I am."
It's like in that one movie, it was one of the parody movies with all the teenage movies from like that era.
The one with
And
Chris Evans?
Oh my God. He was totally in that movie. I had no idea. And then, like, when I was envisioning it in my mind, now I'm thinking of that guy. That was totally him.
Oh my God.
Wow.
He was always hot. He just like never had any like glow up. He just.
Yeah, he just, kind of did his thing until Marvel came around.
For
And then
real.
he just, did his thing there. And now he is a heartthrob.
He's always been a heartthrob, I think.
He
Like,
has been, yeah.
not another teen movie, even though he was like an asshole.
He
I'm
was a
sure.
hot asshole.
Right? There's something about a hot asshole that like. Guys hate a lot of guys are like, oh, why do girls like them? But like a bad boy, I don't know. Chef's kiss, mwah.
I think it's just we are naturally, and I mean, this is from an evolutionary biology perspective, I guess, whatever. I try not to take it too seriously because I know how
Go
controversial
off, my
this is.
psychologist queen.
Yes, queen. Yes, this is my thing. yeah, I think it's just like with masculine guys, it's like we see them as being protectors, and I wouldn't say providers though, because those types of guys, the bad boys, they're also unreliable. So, I actually read an excerpt of, I think it was something like, those kind of guys make really good sperm donors, but they don't make really good like fathers, sort of thing.
Yikes.
So I guess like the guys who, should be sperm donors are not also marriage material, apparently. So that is not, a great outcome.
I feel like that was an evolutionary flaw with humans. Like,
Yeah.
we should figure that out.
We really need to, because I don't think there's really an equivalent for women, because no one ever, well, no one studies women in
That's
medical
also true.
theory or like psychology. No one's ever really taken the time for us.
Oh my
But
God. That reminds me. Another weird science fact. All
I'm
the
so ready.
medication that we have, we don't know if the science is valid at all because rats, which are the primary mammals that we test a lot of the medication on, they
Yeah.
react so differently when they're handled by males versus when they're handled by females. When
I
they're
have heard of
handled by
that.
males, they're like totally freaked out the whole time. But when they're handled by females, they're calm and content. And like the reaction where we think that it's an adverse reaction, it's probably them reacting to being like manhandled. Like, is that not insane?
That is insane. Oh my gosh. We really need to like come a long way with like socialization. You know what I mean? Like animals are so threatened by man hands, I feel like that is just if our entire medical science is just a product of this mishap, I think we need to really reevaluate how we are socializing men. That's what I have to say about that.
Oh, I didn't think of it that way. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, guys are taught to be rough, and women are, you know, taught to not be rough, I guess.
Yeah.
So, especially I can imagine guys in, like, that field are probably kind of, like, I'm generalizing a lot right now. I am, like, not really making a lot of sense, but I can imagine guys in the medical field are probably assholes a lot of the time. So
you're not wrong.
I feel like they probably have an ego, and I can assume that as a result, like, not as a result, or like just as a part of that kind of personality, I can imagine definitely like that would make you a lot more prone to being kind of a I don't want to say abusive, but more prone to, you know, not knowing.
Maybe aggressive.
Yeah, aggressive. That's a good word for it. But yeah, that makes total sense.
Did we just solve a mystery, a medical mystery?
We did.
Wow.
Two girls just solved a medical mystery. Take that, male science.
We went from aromatherapy to owning Watson and Crick. Like, what can this podcast not do?
I can't wait till we get in articles and we see our names in parentheses.
They're like two girls bullshitting off of their last breath, figured out the biggest problem in medicine.
We just need socialized men to be less manhandly.
Mm-hmm. And because we need to scare the rats less.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably think those rats are disposable, and the women are like, no, they're just animals.
Because maybe, you know, they're cuddly.
Maybe they're cuddly. That is really interesting, though, honestly, in all seriousness, that something like that would be, like, so profound. I think I remember Sonia talking about that, actually.
I feel like she commented on that before.
Yeah.
So, because this is going to be published to the whole wide world, who doesn't know about the Grump, Sonia is one of our friends who's on this Facebook group, and we kept on changing the name of the group from the group to the group with a capital G to the group with a misspelled something, and we ended up spelling it Grump, so GRONP. I don't know why
that name came from.
I just thought it was so hilarious, like when we were.
I always just called it the group, though, because, like, the Gromp. Do you guys call it the Gromp?
I call it the Gromp. Meetings?
Yeah. So when you're at your mod meetings, you guys call it the Gromp.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's funny. I knew that there was a story behind it, but I didn't know exactly what it was. So knowing that it was just a typo makes it even funnier.
I love saying it. It's just, like, such a big meme in my head. It's
the Grump.
Like, yeah, every time anyone says it, I'm like,
I can't imagine what it was like, just like thinking of that and then just making that typo and just it being like, you know, when you make a typo with a friend and it's like they'll laugh about it and just tease you about it forever, and that's exactly what this is. So whoever made that typo, it's like they have to live with it now.
I feel like Dior did it. Either Dior or Chirag. Either one of those two.
Well, if it's Dior, then that's fine, because I think he's out. So he's not around anymore to have to deal with it. But Chirag, that wouldn't surprise me either, I guess.
It would be a thing of pride for him. Let's be real.
Probably. So since I guess people in the Grump are going to be listening to this, maybe we should like talk about some of the highlights from this week about posts that have been posted. I actually haven't been around this week a lot.
I really haven't. I can look through.
We can do that. I actually closed my laptop because I didn't know if that was going to affect, like, I don't know, I was thinking it could have affected like the networking or whatever.
Maybe if your signal's kind of weak.
It actually turned on and you're still here, so I think it worked.
I've been charging my phone on my laptop this whole time, so
so yeah, it should be fine then.
Yeah. There's a lot of invitations for lunch and dinner.
There was your post. Oh.
Oh, the salad post?
Yeah, so I was looking through that and
not a lot of helpful salad comments. Wait, no, just kidding. There's a lot now. Ha 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 ha. I did not see these.
I like Sonia's comment of the Colombian salad that has diced tomato, avo, and onion and cilantro. By the way, onion, you know, just because we're on this podcast and
your digestion.
I was going to talk about like how hard onions are for like how hard they are to digest.
I don't think onions are one of those things that people usually have issues digesting because it's like a kind of a universal base for a lot of foods. But I have heard that, like, I know there's a type of Buddhism and a type of Hinduism where they don't use, like, aliens. So they don't use, like, garlic or onions in their cooking. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, this really helps, like, digestion and making things smoother and cleaner. And I was like, huh, maybe Maria is onto something.
Maybe.
Or they're probably onto something and I'm connecting you to it and completely erasing their history.
Probably. But yeah, I mean, I've never heard, I know, you know, onion and like garlic when they're fully cooked, that's when it's fine to eat, like for me, because, you know, they're used in everything. They should be used in everything because they are a great flavoring. Mm-hmm. But like if someone puts like raw onion on something, which honestly isn't much of a thing, I think, because most people don't really like raw onion. That's very pungent. But I just know.
Yeah, I used to like the taste of it, but like now I just take it off whenever I have raw onion in my food, especially if I'm outside, because raw onion will like destroy your breath. Like,
yes.
I can't have that, especially if I'm like outside and eating with people. I'm like, you know what? As a courtesy, I am not going to eat these raw onions, but it's gotten to be such a bad habit that even if I'm at home and there's like food that has raw onions, I like take it off because I'm like thrown off to the taste of it.
Yeah. And it nauseates me. The whole smell of onions, it's what like pregnant women say, but it also just like nauseates me too. So I just kind of like it sits in my stomach and it sits in my mouth, so you know,
yeah, it's got like a sulfury BO kind of smell sometimes. Like I know what you're talking about.
Why did we decide to eat them? That makes me really think, like, what compelled us to want to consume this thing and why is it everywhere? I think it's very interesting that like we want to consume a vegetable that smells like our own body odor.
Maybe it's because it grows underground and like in the winter you can like grow it without worrying the cold is gonna kill it.
That's
something
very true.
I don't know. I don't really know the mechanics of growing onions. I know they grow underground. That's all I know.
Yeah, because they are root vegetables, right? Like carrots and potatoes and all that. I am probably going to say something so dumb. I was going to say, like, what else grows underground? Like, watermelon? No. Does watermelon grow underground?
I don't think so. I know pineapples do.
Yes, pineapples do. They, like, grow underground and then they kind of, like, sprout up. Their growth is actually really fun to see because it's like you can see them grow like a flower sort of thing.
I've seen like pictures of it. They look very interesting.
They blossom. They just have that glow up.
I wish I could be like a pineapple. Chris Me Evans too. was never in a pineapple stage. He was always like Dole Whip.
Dole Whip, right? I was a pineapple. I think we were both were pineapples, honestly.
We definitely were both pineapples.
And pineapples also take a while to grow. Actually, let me consult Google, because from what I understand, they take about a year to grow, and it's just like one pineapple.
I can relate to that. I feel like I was like a seriously late bloomer. I still kind of am. Like, I'm just like maturing a lot later than most of my friends.
Yeah, me too. I'm the same way. Especially like, you know, I think we have a very similar sense of humor, and it's not to say that like your sense of humor is really stupid, but it's like I think my sense of humor is really stupid, and like
we both have the same very similar sense of humor, and yeah, I love it.
And I love it so much because I don't feel like a lot of people do that are female, because they are much better socially adjusted than me, and I feel like I'm roasting you, but you are actually a lot more socially adjusted.
No, I relate. Like, I don't know why, but when I was growing up, there were no guys. I mean, just kidding. There were no girls around. Like, when I went to middle school, I had, like, three classes where it was 11 guys and me. Every single class, like, was a sausage fest, and it sucked because I never really learned how to socialize with women until, like, end of high school. But that's when all the cattiness comes in, and by then I was like, I don't know, I'm just not gonna deal with ladies because it's just easier to deal with guys. And then I realized how I missed out on so many amazing conversations with women, and like how supportive the sisterhood is and all the other stuff, and I kind of regret it. Do you kind of get what I'm talking about?
I absolutely get what you're talking about, because I was a lot of the same way. I always found that it was easier for me to talk to guys more than women. And honestly, I kind of attribute that to, you know, having like my dad around all the time. Like, my mom was working, my dad was always home. And I always feel like I grew up like around like someone who thought like a guy and like communicated like a guy. So I always felt that kind of made it harder for me to, like, connect with women for a really long time. Like, I had female friends, but I didn't have very strong female friends. I didn't have, like, a best friend or someone that I connected with really well. So I always found that it was somehow easier to talk to guys and, like, connect with guys. And I know there's like that whole meme about like girls who are like, I only hang out with guys, but mm-hmm. for me, like, being friends with guys always just came more easily, and I was less intimidated by them, unless it was a guy that I really liked, in which case I like either I never talk like for me when I like a guy, it's like I either never talk to him at all, or I want to talk to him all the time. So, but in the most part, like, I always felt more comfortable, like, communicating with guys and, like, being their friend, because, again, it's just, like, I, for a long time, I always felt like, because I didn't connect with women well, they judged me. And so, mm-hmm. for probably up until college for me, I didn't really have a lot of, like, meaningful, like, female friendships. Mm-hmm. I had maybe one or two, but I always feel like a lot of my friends are, like, my best friend that I can think of from high school that I still talk to on a regular basis right now is a guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally relate to what you're talking about.
Yeah. My best friend in high school, well, I kind of think of it like the Mindy Kaling saying, that best friend is a tier. And in my tier, I had a couple girls, but mostly guys. My girl best friend, however, she wasn't girly at all. We were pretty similar. Same. Like, we were very rough, very sarcastic. She had an older brother, maybe that like attributed to it. We were both left-handed. I don't know why, but I feel like left-handed girls, I've just like noticed a trend, we're like a lot more tomboyish than a lot of other girls that I've met, and it's such a weird thing. Are you left-handed?
I'm not. I'm right-handed, but the thing about left-handed people is, like, I notice there's always something different about them.
We're and weird.
I don't know if it's, yeah, I don't know if it's, like, you guys are weird, but it's, you guys, there's something very distinct about, like, your personalities, and I don't know if that's just kind of, like, a bias that I have, because I don't know a lot of left-handed people.
It's the struggle. It's the struggle of learning how to use, like, scissors, a mouse, and a keyboard with the wrong hand.
And you guys
the childhood also, trauma,
like, and you guys are in like an environment that's very like right-handed friendly, so you the world is a much bigger risk to you guys, and I feel like we don't talk about that a lot. Like apparently I've heard of like a statistic where and not to scare you, but you've probably heard of it too. So left-handed people are like more likely to get into some kind of like a fatal accident.
Oh, like a machinery accident.
Yeah. So because we are in such like a like right-handed world.
Mm-hmm.
That like boggles my mind. And I don't know why like people don't talk about that enough. It's like, don't you think maybe that's something that should change or something that should like not I don't know how we would change it, but it's like something that maybe we might want to look into as a society.
I think like because for so many years I know people were like they got their hands like slapped or beaten if they used their left hand.
That's
in a lot of cultures because they were like, oh, that's the devil's hand. And like only recently have we been properly doing studies and going like, hey, maybe handedness isn't such a bad thing. And like, maybe it's, maybe there's more left-handed people than we think. Because when I was growing up, I remember my mom hated that I used my left hand. She used to like try to get me to use my right hand all the time. And I was like, no, I don't like using this hand. I'm going to keep using this hand. And
it's so weird because it's not like half the world uses their left hand and half the world uses their right hand. It's like people, it's like a 11% of the population that uses their left hand.
Yeah.
So that's what's so interesting to me. That's like not a lot of, there are really not a lot of y'all.
There really isn't, but I think it's going to increase like now because there's not that
because
much of like a stigma behind
like,
it.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder if people, like, if they start out with their left hand, if they just eventually start using their right hand because they've been so compelled. Like, to me, it's like, you know, being gay or something like that, where it's like people can try to force it, but it won't happen because it's just how you were born.
I feel like it's more like whichever hand you use to grab your pencil for the first time and that you just, like, stuck with it. Yeah. And there's, like, a little bit of like a stubbornness as well. I feel like it, at least in the past, like left-handed people were like the ones who picked it up with the left hand. And despite what everyone said, they were like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to use this hand and just kept using it. Cause like, I know there's like a statistic about how many presidents there are that are left-handed and it's like way higher than the percentage of left-handed people in the world. It's definitely higher than 11%. And maybe, like, you need to be a little stubborn to become left-handed. And maybe you also need to be a little stubborn to become the president.
Yeah, like, there's definitely a personality trait that is attributed to all that. And I think maybe hardiness is definitely something that could be, like, attributed to people who have, like, who do right with their left hands. I've also heard that people who are more like I've definitely heard like the artistic people tend to be more left-handed, and like there's like a sense of like creativity with people who have who write with their left hand.
Right brain left brain thinking.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, that's from where it's from, but I also feel like that doesn't make sense. Wait, so I'm a psychology major, but I forget. So, like, right-brained is, like, the creative side, right?
Yeah. And so left-brained, like, the mathy side.
But I've also heard that was, like, disputed. Or there's, it
has to be, like.
Yeah, because it sounds like it's not, like, real science, honestly. But I was like trying to figure out like, okay, so your left hand would be like, because you're right, like, so it would make
right
sense
brained
that way. So
I feel like I'm more ambidextrous like the older I'm getting though, because I use my left hand for like really fine motor skill type of things, like if I'm painting someone's nail and like doing really fancy art, or like I'm doing henna or like writing, I'm using my left hand. But if I need strength, like if I'm taking a bat and going to town, I'm using my right hand. I'm usually kicking with my right hand and everything. But once again, if I'm like chopping onions, oh God, I went back to onions. If I'm chopping onions,
full
I'm
circle
using
on onions.
Right.
Because they're round. Makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. But if I'm cutting, like using a knife or something, I'm using my left hand just to get the precision right and everything. And I think handedness can be something we can change about ourselves. I think ambidextrous, like the ability to be ambidextrous, is a lot more innate than we realize. I know that Einstein did it. Like he became ambidextrous on purpose. And I feel like it's something you can train yourself to do just for the sake of it. And left-handed people just have to kind of get ambidextrous, like with the world's instruments and stuff.
Right.
So I think it's something that right-handed people can also jump on and like open up a certain pathway into your brain. Probably helpful.
I totally agree, because I know that my left hand is very useless, and I can't really imagine like a left hand that would be useful, because again, we live in such a right-handed world. But I feel like my productivity would be also a lot, like, better if, you know, I had another functional hand that kind of knew what to do. Because whenever I try to use my left hand, it just doesn't kind of, like, doesn't really work. It's very, like, it's just very slow. And I've kind of noticed it. And I was like, why is this left hand, like, why doesn't it do anything except, like, hold things? Or, like, I can hardly paint my nails with my left hand. So, like, if I'm painting my nails, you'll see, like, my left hand is very nice and clean. And, like, my right hand is very, like, there's, you know, nail polish all over the rim of my nail. And, like, in the inside of my finger. So I feel like just for my nail polish alone, like, it would be so much better if I could just have, like, an ambidextrous lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. That's weird, because I'm good at painting my nails. So that's, like, a strange example for you to bring up. And I'm like, you know what? I relate to this.
And I feel like, you know, maybe that's something that we should teach in schools. What if? And this is mm-hmm. a theory, and this is something that maybe could be tested, but if we teach every kid to have better handedness for both hands,
mm-hmm.
what would that mean for, like, productivity and grades and all that? Like, maybe that could be something that could have, like, a difference in, like, how successful kids are and how, like, yeah. capable they are, and, like, maybe even adaptability.
Maybe there's, like, a study on, like, left-handed people versus right-handed versus ambidextrous, like, how good you are at multitasking. Like,
yeah,
I feel like there has to be it. I know, like, during, like, Nazi Germany, they were, like, obsessed with, like, these types of tests. Like, I feel
yeah,
like they had
they
to.
Have, like, what was the thing? I know I talked about it before, or I know I've, like, researched it. It was that thing, how they had, like, something about the trial. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like,
was it eugenics or phrenology?
Those I think the it was eugenics. Like, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And there was that whole trial that is, like, when you ever do, like, research, or, like, when you're doing research, they do, like, a
the rules
the
thing.
The rules thing. That whole Nazi Germany thing.
It's IRB, you know how you have to
yeah.
get your yeah.
I was thinking about all the IRB stuff when you brought that up, and I was like, oh, I remember doing a PowerPoint, like, I was working at work, my old work, and, like, I was doing a PowerPoint on, like, the whole trials that, like, mm-hmm. led to the IRB. to be like brought up and everything.
Have you seen the IRB building at UCF?
I didn't even know we had one. I knew that there was an IRB department, but I didn't know there was a building.
It's in the Teaching Academy. Or teaching building, whichever. The one that has the Einsteins in it.
I think that's it, yeah. Oh, that's a whole building?
I think it's, like, just a corner of the first floor, but I walked past it a couple times, and I was like, wow, you guys decided that my research was good. And then you decided not to let us publish.
So where did your research get published? I know you did, like, undergraduate research, right?
Yeah. So I was an RA, and we just got, like, our name in the thank you mentions section for, like, two of the publications, and another one I started with my PI, and we got pretty far. We, from the design to the research to the recruiting of the people, recording it, recording the videos and the script, getting it on Qualtrics, getting people to actually take the quizzes and stuff, and then doing all the ANOVA math and stuff. We did that. But we never ended up getting it published in the end because my PI was like, you need to go a little bit more deeper on your research portion, even though I was just like, I don't know what else I can do. And it just got stuck in that point. So like, I've done everything but send it for publication. Like, I feel like it's good enough on its own right now to publish, but she didn't feel like it. And then she just went off and is now working as a psychologist for the Navy. So that's that.
Oh, and that's right. You were in a human factors lab, right?
I was.
One of my most vivid memories was, and I think you actually might have worked with her because she was also human factors, what was her name?
Jennifer? We have Jennifer and Fernanda, the Brazilian PhD student.
I knew Jennifer because she was my teacher for research methods.
Jennifer Louie?
Yep, she did the driving thing.
I worked with her on it.
Talk about your research. I'm so interested.
I have over 3,000 logged hours working for the driving simulation lab. It was insane. We did a lot of we even did some software troubleshooting at one point. We figured out how to do the tone monitoring and the working memory capacity. It's just like we took this police academy cop simulation video that had graphics from freaking 2001. It's horrible and ugly, but whatever. And we had three hardware hard drives from a Windows 95. I don't know why they didn't give us better computers, but it was so sad. You had to press the power button for all three to just turn them on. And the computing power was probably able to have one screensaver go from left to right or something.
And that's the computers that they had in that lab?
Yeah, it was so sad. We had desktops where we could actually do some recording, and it would have Windows 2007 and stuff like that, but the computers that ran the simulation software, they were ancient.
Wow.
Yeah, but we did a lot of a lot of the research, and the stuff that we used was her equipment. Her boyfriend, I guess now ex, had this iPhone that we used to do a lot of the tone monitoring tests on. I don't know if this is illegal to talk about or whatever. I know it got published, but I don't know. I'm just paranoid. Did I sign something and I'm not allowed to talk about this?
But what was your research about? What were you guys researching?
Basically? We were researching working memory capacity. If you're when you're driving, if you have to do some other tasks, are you able to focus on driving? Did the type of the task that you're focusing on impact, how distracted you are? And we had like multiple types of tasks that you had to do, like different people did different tasks while they were driving, and we like compared it to like them driving normally versus them driving with the tasks that they had to do.
And what were these tasks?
They would be like, you'd hear like a couple tones in your ear, and then you'd have to like, you'd have like the iPhone on the like in a Velcro attached to the steering wheel, and you'd press like the tones in order, but you're also driving in like an actual car with like brakes and everything with traffic. So you'd have to like be able
Oh.
to navigate that while you're doing that. And then there's like this thing where you'd hear like a list and you'd have to like repeat the list back and stuff like that.
And this was all like on a simulation, right? So participants just had to simulate it. So in my mind, I was kind of thinking, how did they drive and do that, all of that? How's that
We
like not?
had three projectors actually. We had three projectors and they would like project onto the screen like a really ugly 32-bit city that you're driving through. And I remember like the projectors would get like super duper hot if you didn't turn them off as soon as like the participant was done with their thing, and we'd get in trouble if like someone would like taking too long to turn it off. And it
Yeah.
would smell like smoke because it's like so
Oh.
overworked.
Wow, that's what happens when you have like a 95 computer, right? Computer from like
Seriously underfunded. Like UCF needs to increase their funding.
I can imagine like, you could probably get even better results with newer computers, but especially 'cause they're human factors, like I'm
Yeah.
surprised that they don't fund their human factors department even better
To be
'cause
fair, the human factors department was ballin'. Like, I knew they were making bank all the time.
Yeah, because they, I know UCF is a very like, so for anyone who doesn't know what human factors is, because it's kind of like a field that isn't really talked about a lot. So if you can imagine psychology and engineering kind of like coming together at one, that is sort of what human factors is about. It's about using like psychological theory to develop functional things and like ergonomics and just
Ergonomics was
basic,
big, yeah.
yeah. So basically, like human design and performance is what human factors is kind of all about, like modeling and simulation, and things like driving, like what Dia researched, stuff like that is what basically human factors is all about.
There's
And
also
so
something interesting. I know that a lot of them work with lawyers. So, like, there's this one
yeah.
professor. If like an example that he used was like he published this paper on like something about red lights and like the human eye if they can notice it or not at like a certain time or something. And he was like the only guy who ever published this for some wacko reason. And there was this accident case that happened where this like old lady sped through a red light, and the lawyers found this article that this guy wrote, and he was the only person. So he was the de facto expert on the subject. So they called him up and they paid him like a bunch of money to explain his research and be like, hey, scientifically, this old woman couldn't have noticed this red light. So you got to let her go. And now, like, lawyers are getting involved with using a lot of human factor sciences to prove or disprove their clients' cases. So I thought it was really
That's
cool.
awesome. I mean, that's, how psychologists get money. I'm sure nowadays, because especially as it's a growing field, and I can imagine that's a really great way to make money. Because I know that, like, with industrial organizational psychology, there's definitely like a legal component because we all like, I had a whole class on employment law and all that, and we're often like used as like subject matter as experts. I actually think that they're it's like a subset of IO psychologists who end up being like that. But that's really interesting that it's also a thing in human factors too. Then it's growing. And also I know that human, like the UCF program for human factors, like it's a PhD program, and I think it's like one of the best, like if not the best.
It might be.
North,
I
not.
remember, what's it called? Jen was telling me, she was like, "Are you sure you don't want to apply for a PhD at psychology?" And I was like, "No." And then I looked into the UCF program and I was like, "Shit, maybe I should
Yeah.
have."
It was something that I was considering for a while, but I was like turned off by the engineering aspect all that, and like I was not good enough honestly for a PhD program at the time, so that's why I went into IO. And I think a lot of psych students, because we get kind of memed on because we're like the, a major that people don't like really take seriously, because in order to be successful in psychology, like quote unquote, you have to kind of go through a pretty extensive education, if you're doing the clinical route. And so a lot of psych students are kind of getting more into what's called IO psychology, and so that's like business psychology. And that's a route that a lot of people are going into now, because apparently, like, it's like quote unquote, like more lucrative. Even though it's like, we need clinical psychologists, especially in this day and age where like mental health is becoming so much more important. And it's sad that
Oh, for
like
sure.
people are being driven out of it because it's not as like lucrative. And I'm saying this as someone who was also driven away by like going into the clinical route, but
That, like, you bring up a really good point, and I'm just gonna get a little bit like candid right here. I was actually looking for like therapists just because, like, just to deal with stuff, and I got a list from my doctor, and like I went down the list. The first three numbers didn't even exist as places. Like, they didn't update this sheet of paper since like God knows when, and I had to go down so many like options. I think there was like 20 numbers on the entire page, and like near the end I got towards something that like is actually open and like was functioning. Because like the other, like, there's places where I called and they were like, "Oh, you need like a month before you can get an appointment in," and I was like, "I don't know if I have the mental capacity to last a month before dealing with whatever, so thanks but no thanks." And like,
Right.
we're just, it's just like such a underfunded area that I feel like needs way more like attention and like public support.
Right. And a lot less people like discouraging people from going that route because it's not lucrative. And that's another like big issue. Like, we shouldn't be telling people don't do things because it doesn't make them money, because a lot of the things that don't make a lot of money is are things that like we need to have in this society, especially therapists.
We need to increase the wage of a lot of these workers also.
Yeah.
Like, they
Also,
deserve to be paid for, like, emotional labor is such a
it is
heavy
really
thing.
taxing, right?
Yeah.
We always think of like cognitive labor and like, physical labor as stuff that's like deserving of monetary support, but like emotional labor, I think hopefully we are coming to kind of a realization of how like how bad it is to be emotionally taxed all the time, and like the ramifications of all of that. So I hope and pray that like one day, people who are dealing with those kind of jobs on a day-to-day basis, that they're receiving like, the income that they deserve, and like for that effort and level of like, is that something that's ringing in your background, or?
I think that's like this clock that I have, and at the
Oh, it's
hour
so
of.
pleasant.
It
I was gonna say it's like it sounds like a lullaby.
has like a different song for every hour, and it's not the end of the hour exactly, but we have been talking for
We've been
59
talking.
minutes.
This is a
Wow.
59-minute podcast.
Okay, maybe we should wrap it up.
That's what I was thinking, because I was like, wow, are people going to be like listening to this for an hour? I'm going to be surprised, but
maybe.
I hope people who are on an hour commute listen to this entire thing.
For sure, for sure. I hope they listen to this and I don't know, have their curiosity piqued
or whatever. Because we talked about a lot of stuff.
We did. We had no agenda. We had no
agenda. This was a total run through of everything that was on our mind at 1 p.m.
This was pure stream of consciousness. Like, Faulkner would be proud.
He would be. And I'm like, I was thinking, you know, my voice is pretty good right now for a podcast. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes, you know, I listen to my voice and I'm like, I'm not really feeling it because it just doesn't sound good. But at this point, it's, you know, do you know what I'm talking about when your voice is kind of like raspy a little bit and you're like, okay, my voice sounds a little bit more pleasant right now than normal?
I think I'm at that right now because I've been getting like on and off sick. So I'm like sniffling in the background, coughing, and I'm pretty sure the listeners are going to be irritated by this. But if anything, you should be irritated at my really shit healthcare plan. So
yeah,
listen to this more so I can afford better healthcare.
Yeah, and that'll be on our next podcast on problems with this entire healthcare system that we live in right now with America being the way that it is and not, you know, providing healthcare to people who need it the most and, like, neglecting this entire mental health problem where people don't get the help they need, and it drives away people who are equipped to handle these things because they don't get funded for their hard work. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that totally deserves its own podcast.
You are right. And with that, I'm going to wrap up this podcast. I am so happy that my friend Maria was able to come on as a guest on this Orbiting with Thea. I think it's Orbing with Thea, but I'm not sure. I literally created this podcast like a week ago. So tune in next time to have some more stream of consciousness conversations with two of the Gromp girls. See you next
time. Thank you guys. See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.